Hello everyone, and a very warm welcome to this Textile Talk podcast. I'm Gail Cowley, and I'll be your host today. Joining me for this episode is textile artist Ellie Hipkin. Just to give you a little bit of background before we start our chat, Ellie is a textile artist working from her garden studio in Brighton. Surrounded by the South Downs, Sussex coastline and wild plants discovered on walks, she draws inspiration from colours, contours and the ever-changing atmosphere of the natural world. Ellie's artworks reflect this connection, blending abstract painting with delicate textile techniques to create pieces that evoke a sense of place and season. Ellie's paintings often feature unique imprints taken from seed heads and grasses, preserving their organic forms in fabric. Drawing into this composition with free motion embroidery, applique and hand stitching, utilising techniques she honed during a decade as a fashion designer. At the heart of her practice is a passion for creating and teaching. Through the Flourish Textile Art Hub, an online platform she founded in 2021, Ellie shares a wide variety of textile techniques, inspiring creativity. Recently, she's introduced guest tutors, expanding the Art Hub offerings, and fostered a vibrant, supportive community. Alongside this, she continues to deliver in-person workshops and exhibit her work nationally. So, Ellie, thank you so much for agreeing to do this podcast episode of Textile Talk. I'm really delighted to be speaking to you today.
Oh, hello, and thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. So I wonder if the first thing that I could do, just to start everything off, is ask you to tell us some more about yourself, your background, and how you came to textile art.
Oh, hello, and hello to everyone who's listening. My name is Ellie Hipkin, and I am a textile mixed media artist. And textiles has been in my life really since school. I had a wonderful textile teacher when I was at school who introduced me to free motion embroidery. And I was lucky enough when I went on to do A-level art, my A-level teacher was actually a textile designer as well. So she introduced me to the concept of mixing all different types of mediums together with textiles. I went on to have a career as a fashion designer. I went to Nottingham Trent University and learned about fashion design and got a job afterwards, but in London. And I worked in the sort of suppliers end. So it was mainly sort of manufacturing side of things. So, and I worked from doing tailoring and outerwear, but then I settled into what they call soft separate. So it was like dresses, skirts. And I worked mainly for the last sort of 6-7 years of working in industry. I worked with factories out in India. And it really brought me back to my love of textiles, not just sort of product design. And I got the opportunity to go back into designing my own prints and embroideries. And India is just such a wonderful place to be inspired anyway. So it really brought me back to, I suppose, those things that I really loved when I was doing my A-levels. And I started at home to kind of play around with doing a bit of like painting, and actually I started off doing like silk painting. And then when I left the industry, it was due to personal circumstances. A lot was going on in my life at that point, and I started painting for myself, and it never felt finished until I added that textile element, that stitch, the fabrics, the embroidery. And I suppose that was the journey that brought me back to doing my textile art.
Wonderful. So it's really interesting to hear you mention how much difference or how much effect two of the teachers that you studied under had on your life, it does make quite a difference, doesn't it, depending on who you get and how enthusiastic they are.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they really did. And I think especially my A-level teacher, she really made me realise there was a future in it as well. I think, especially when you're at school, I think you worry about going down the creative path a little bit, that it's not a proper job and all those sort of things, and you should do something else that's a bit more professional. And she sort of opened my eyes to a whole array of things that you can do. And I think what's really lovely about textiles is that there's such a big scope to it. And there's no right or wrong. It's just what you love to create, you know, from doing, if you're someone who loves complete hand embroidery, or if you like designing fabric prints, or you like mixing it all together, or, you know, there's such a variety in textiles. And I think there's something for everybody.
Do you think that the course that you did, or the degree course that you did at Nottingham, really sort of gave you the enthusiasm to continue on with it as a career? Or were you already, previous to that, were you already determined that was what you wanted to do?
I was pretty determined beforehand. And I remember feeling a little frustrated after A-levels having to do my foundation in art and design. I mean, I loved the bit where we did textiles, but with the foundation, you have to do the fine art, the photography, all the other sort of disciplines before you can apply for a degree in any design course. Mm-hmm. And I almost felt a little frustrated about that year. Looking back, I'm glad I did it now. You know, there was lots of positives about that year. But at the time, I think I was just so sort of focused on that route, and I just wanted to get on with it, basically.
Yes, yeah.
But yes, I think with like a fashion degree, in hindsight, I wish I had done something that was mixing textiles and fashion a little bit more. I think it totally prepared me for being a product designer in fashion, that degree. But so I, you know, it would have been nice for it to be mixed up with more of that sort of the design of textiles and fabrics and things like that. But I still loved it. I absolutely loved Nottingham Trent as a university. I had a wonderful 3 years there, and it did lead me into the career that I had. So, you know.
I suppose one of the things it does do is give you almost permission to experiment for a period of time, doesn't it?
Exactly. And I just, you know, with anyone sort of embarking on degrees now, I always say to them, you know, because it's cost so much money, you've got to really want to do it and make sure it's everything you want it to be. You know, it's your opportunity to really experiment and play. And you know, and that's kind of how I approach my own artwork now, is with that sort of playful experimentation. And I think when you let yourself really experiment and play, you really discover new things and new ways of approaching your work that you hadn't done before. You know, so.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think that often it's the area, I call them the areas in between. So the ones that are between different disciplines or different techniques that often produce the most innovative, exciting work, isn't it?
Yeah.
Obviously with your own work, I know it's sort of between textiles and sort of art, isn't it? It's almost a cross between the two.
Yeah, I like to think that, I suppose I'm playing with the techniques of what art is, like printing and painting and things. But I think the scope of what textiles has become now, it's almost like, you know, it's just about choosing your medium. Like you know, are you picking up a tool to do some printmaking, or are you picking up a paintbrush, or are you picking up a needle and thread? It's just your choice of materials you're using. So I think, you know, hopefully those lines are blurring to some extent to what textiles was always considered a, you know, it is a craft and we should be proud of that. But I think it is sort of blurring its lines and what traditionally is considered fine art as well.
Yeah, because it's very often, well, maybe not so much now, but it was very much thought of as women's work, wasn't it, in times gone by? And I think that's changing, which is great. I always feel that actually, rather than fine art being in many ways a better and more sophisticated discipline, that actually take it, because you've still got all of the design work, the preparation work, the experimentation before you actually move on to a piece. So you're still doing the art side of it. But then once you move on, you've got to work out how you can actually render your artwork into textiles, and many things can go amiss there. So I almost think that it's a double set of skills, really, that you're having to bring to bear in order to go to take that journey from a source through to a finished article.
I absolutely agree. And many other textile artists that I chat to, we often start with the sketching and the painting and all that art element, like you say, but then it's then converting it into that textiles. In many ways, we have it's so much more complex and detailed and layered than, you know, a traditional painting on a canvas, you know. So I think actually a lot of textile is so much more involved than people even realize.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. It's one of those strange anomalies, really, that if somebody does textiles, then they fully understand, I think, what goes into it, obviously depending on the level of textiles they're doing. But in that case, they would probably be able to do it themselves or come close to it. If they don't do it and they've never been on that journey or actually produced anything like that, then they really don't understand what goes into it, the time and the effort that goes into it, do they?
No. And I find it really interesting when I do exhibitions. So I often, when someone comes over to me, I won't mention the embroidery, and I absolutely love it when they get up closer and they're like, wait, what is that? Is that stitch in there? And is that a bit of fabric? And then it's just that lovely realization that it's more than paint. And I love that when I see people discover that. But it also, you know, is this fine line that I feel like I'm always juggling, because I'm mixing the two elements together. They've got to work together as well. And I never want a stitch or a fabric on there that feels like it's been put on there for the sake of making it textile art. It's got to all blend and belong together. And actually, if someone doesn't even notice those things initially, it means it all sits cohesively together. And that's the sort of constant juggling act I feel that I am doing with my work all the time, and constantly questioning, does it need it? Does it need it? Does this need it? Will it benefit by putting more French knots here, or shall I do this applique there? Or, you know, so I think, you know, it is that sort of balancing act with it as well.
Because sometimes there is I know we see this with students, our students, sometimes that they feel the need to overwork. You know, once you start to work on one aspect of it, you sort of think, well, I've done this bit and that bit over there looks quite bare. So then you go over onto that bit, and before you know it, you've almost obscured the original design by just throwing lots and lots of stitch at it. And I think sometimes less is more, isn't it, in that circumstance?
And it's so hard. I think it's such a hard thing to get that balance right. And I think working slowly is really beneficial, because I think when you love a process as well, so if you're really enjoying your embroidery, it's so easy, isn't it, to just keep going with it, because it's the act of the process that you're getting something from. So I think if you work quite slowly, this is what works for me anyway, if I work quite slowly with something and I put, if I hit a point of like, oh, should I be putting more over there, I tend to walk away from it for a while. It could be a day or 2 days or whatever. I then come back to it with fresh eyes and I think, does it need that? And you can make better decisions, I find, that way. And I also, when I'm also contemplating those composition elements, is I always think you need resting points in your artwork. So it's really nice to have areas of what I call high impact of detail, and then there needs space elsewhere. So your eye is naturally drawn to those areas of intense work. So that's sort of another thing that you can be asking yourself. Should I, when you hit those moments of, shall I be adding more here? So yeah, that's those are the sort of thought processes I personally go through to try and stop myself overworking a piece. But it's very challenging.
It is. And I think it's a great tip to just, as you say, park it and walk away for a little while. Because you, I suppose by its very essence, embroidery does tend to be, it's relatively slow depending on the technique. And you're just concentrating on one area. So you become almost obsessed, don't you, with just that area that you're working on. Backing off sometimes does allow you just to take a little bit of time and see the whole thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I find it works for me personally. Yeah, just to take it each step at a time and not get carried away with the enjoyment of the process as well.
So yeah. I know that you use walking in nature and by the sea for some of your inspiration. Can you tell us something about the process that you go through to take from going on a walk, something that inspires you to actually the finished item?
Yeah, I think nature is such a really important aspect of my work, and it's something I return to when I finished working in the industry. So the reason I finished working in the industry is that my daughter was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes and she was only one at the time.
Oh,
and I lost my mum the same year. So that was a fabulous year, as you can imagine.
Oh, gosh.
And, yes, we all have these moments, don't we? And I sort of, at the same time as returning back to my sort of art processes, at that same time I sort of returned back to my love of nature, and I grew up in the countryside, you see. So instinctively I sort of, you know, went out for walks, and luckily being on the south coast, I'm in Brighton, so even though I'm still a city person, I'm really lucky with Brighton that I've got the South Downs and I think a very beautiful coastline in Sussex. So I had nature on my doorstep and I just started going out, basically, and I still do a lot. And I don't really look for inspiration, because going out walking is just, I don't want to put the pressure of going, I'm out looking for inspiration today. But I will just see something, or, you know, it's the change of the seasons, or, you know, how the mist is looking over the downs and how it's changed the coloration. So color's really important to me, how that affects, could be very emotive color. And obviously I love wild botanicals and things like that. So if something catches my eye, I just gather it. I take lots of photographs. I do often have a little sketchbook with me. Some days I use it, some days I don't. It just, you know, depending on what I've seen. And as the season goes, I love collecting dry grasses and seed heads. And around August, September time, I go out with a basket and I tend to gather things that have started to dry out. And that aspect I do then physically use in my artwork. So I do mono printing with those grasses and seed heads. They also inspire the embroideries and the appliques that I use. So I often use those sketches to work out how I'm going to do the free motion embroidery. So yes, I get that inspiration from nature through the colour that I kind of see and the sort of botanicals that I gather. So yes, it's a really important aspect of my work, and yeah, that's how I kind of use it and bring it in.
And how do you actually go from the sketch or the piece that you finished to into developing that to be a piece that you're going to stitch on? Is that a sort of pretty natural process? Is it something that you have to work on you know, fairly regularly?
I use my sketching. I do what I call a continuous line sketch. So, you know, when you're on your sewing machine, that's essentially what you're doing. You're doing a continuous line drawing with your sewing machine. I think what's really nice to go from sketch to free motion, rather than, I don't transfer any of my designs onto my fabric or anything like that. I literally go from sketch. I put my sketch next to me and I then just draw with my sewing machine. So there's no trying to transfer the design over or anything like that. But it's the act of drawing as a continuous line. It's, and if you do this enough, essentially, it sort of teaches you how you can do that on the sewing machine. And that's how I kind of go from sketch to free motion. Yeah, so I literally draw and then go straight onto the sewing machine. And yeah, I just start drawing with my sewing machine.
Can you tell us a little bit about the, because obviously before that point, you will have transferred your base design, won't you, onto the fabric?
Yes. Yeah, so I tend to use fabric paints onto raw fabric. So I don't really use acrylics or anything like that. I tend to use Pebelo fabric paints. It's not that you can't use acrylics, because you can, but I really like the way the fabric paints work on raw fabrics. I like the fact that I can iron it and then applique it, and I can sort of fiddle around and manipulate it, I think personally, easier than if I'm using acrylic paints. Mm-hmm. But how I come to those sort of painting, I can approach it quite abstract, so that, like I said, with those colors that I've been influenced or inspired by what I've drawn from nature, sometimes I can literally take the color palette that I've sort of developed and do something quite abstract, and then layer with my embroideries that way. And that's sort of where I'm sort of going with it quite a lot. Sometimes I do more literal landscapes, but I have to say I'm kind of moving away from that. And I quite like the colour and the paint to be more sort of evocative of a place because of the coloration. And then once I've built up that background of color, and it can be mark making as well, so that's where I've used sort of physical objects to create pattern and print in there. Once I've got that, I then sort of build up sort of botanical shapes on top of that, really with appliques and free motion embroidery and then hand stitch. And the appliques, I tend to use quite sheer fabrics, so mainly like chiffons and organzas and things like that, mainly because you don't lose what the paintwork is doing behind. It just sort of helps bring it, the embroidery forward and push the paintwork back, but you don't lose it either. You can still see those marks behind it.
Yes, again, sometimes that's something that we see students do. You know, they actually build up a lovely background, and then obscure quite a lot of it by applying fabrics or a lot of stitch on the, so it is a little bit about allowing that lovely artwork to show through, but judiciously picking it out, isn't it?
Yeah. So I kind of use the painting aspect sort of to set the scene, the coloration, and maybe for me, color has quite an emotional response. And that's really reflected by the sort of color palettes that I pick up throughout the seasons.
Mm.
And then it's then the literal aspect is the embroidery, you know, that's sitting on top.
Yeah. And what sort of fabric and thread do you use? Do you have a preference, or do you just use whatever you've got in? Or
so most of my base fabrics that I use is like a heavy cotton canvas. Mm-hmm. I really like working with that. Or luchador, heavy luchador, I love working with, is my base as well. Cotton canvas and luchador are probably my favourite base fabrics that I use. And linen I've used as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tend to build up, like I said, with like chiffons and things like that as appliques. I have used like dobby fabrics. So they're more like shirting weight cottons. And they usually have like a spot or like a weave in it. I used to use that a lot in my fashion days for like shirting and things.
Mm-hmm.
But I quite like painting those, being quite random with the painting. So often when I have leftover bit of paint, I might get out some of the dobbies and just throw a bit of colour on them, because then they can be quite nice to kind of cut up and add shapes to as well. And they've got a lovely texture to the fabric. But they're my main ones that I use over the top of the paintwork, yeah.
And do you have favourite machine threads or hand threads that you use?
I use just normal like polyester and like rayon fabric, rayon threads to embroider with. I quite like a top stitch thread occasionally. But yes, they're the sort of main ones that I go to, really. Yeah.
So you don't have a machine that's really, really picky and has to have the same top and bottom? And
God, my sewing machine's really old. I often get asked, people message me and always say, you know, what sewing machine do you have? And I think they think I've got this big, expensive, really fancy sewing machine, and I really don't. It's a Genome sewing machine my parents bought me before I went to university, so it's really old now. Mm. But I love the way she feels, and she's just still going.
You get a relationship with them,
yeah,
don't you?
And it's funny because I did buy a newer sewing machine. It was so I could do some small workshops in my studio, and I mean it's fine, but you know, I never use it personally because I always go back to my really old one.
Mm. And it's kept going, obviously. Do you have it serviced regularly? Or
no, I'm no. Really naughty. I'm not a good sewing machine keeper, but it keeps going. I keep saying I must get you serviced, and every year I think I'm going to get it serviced, and then I don't, and then yeah, 1 August when I'm not, because I don't tend to work in August too much. So I keep thinking it can go on a holiday as well.
Yeah, because if you're using it every day, it's being without it, isn't it?
I know. It really is.
Now, I know sometimes I speak to people and, you know, they've had one machine for a really long time because they love it. But in that time, it's had almost everything new, new motor, everything. But they still carry on going back to it because you do get, I don't know, I suppose you get a sort of feel for them, don't you? Feel for how they run and how they're going to work with certain threads or certain fabrics.
Yeah, oh, totally. And I've never had to replace anything on this machine. it just, you know, just keeps on going. One day it's going to just completely die on me and I'm going to be utterly heartbroken. But yes, so it's been with me for a long time. And I really, you know, like you say, I've got a relationship now with this sewing machine. But yes, it's an old faithful one. So nothing fancy at all. And quite old.
Do you use a hoop when you're embroidering, or do you just do it freehand?
Yeah, I've never got on with a hoop with free motion embroidery. I find it really restrictive and it sort of clanks around in there. And to me, it's sort of the opposite of what I'm trying to, you know, what free motion embroidery is, and it's that freedom. Yeah. So I use, because I'm on a quite heavy canvas anyway, that's a good stable weight, but I do iron on a heavy interfacing and it just stops it completely bouncing. And because I tend to work quite big as well, and my botanicals can be quite big, if I was trying to do each bit in a hoop, I don't know, I don't think it would work. So I need that core freedom to be able to move around that artwork quite freely. That I don't use a hoop. No.
Well, I think the other thing is as well that if you move a hoop from one place to the other, it can mark the fabric quite substantially to the point where you really can't even iron it out.
Yeah. No. I've never been a fan of that. So yeah, and because I've got a decent heavy base, and then I'm ironing on a decent interfacing, I've never had an issue with it at all. So yeah, and it just then gives me that total freedom around the artwork to kind of move around, which is really important for me.
Do you ever take commissions? Do you work to commission, or is it always about putting a final piece out for sale of and the design is your choice?
Yes, I mainly work to that rather than commissions. I have done a few commissions, so it tends to be a place that might be quite important to somebody. So I often say if they want me to do a commission, I tend to not be very literal in my interpretation. I tend to like to have lots of photos to get a really good sense of coloration. So I try and get them to pinpoint a particular moment in a season or something they really love. So it all starts with that colour. And it's the same way I approach all my artwork, is that sense of colour. It might be nice to have what botanicals that we can incorporate in there that's from that local area, if they've got any, because sometimes I use them as stencils with fabric spray paints as well. So that's another way that you can incorporate those botanicals in a physical way, as well as just mono printing. So it's less literal. And if they're happy to embrace that, if they know my work, then I'm really happy to do commissions for people. But it will be in the same way that I approach my own artwork. So, yeah. So a mixture of both. But mainly, I mainly produce a collection and then sell it. And I usually sell through my own website. Everything's on my website. I do the Brighton Artist Open Houses. I host that. And I do put my work forward for open calls and exhibitions and things like that as well. So,
The Brighton Open House sounds really interesting. How does that work?
Oh, it's a real big tradition here in Brighton, and it's fabulous. So if anyone can ever come down to Brighton in May, do, because it's really wonderful. So it runs every weekend in May, and so hundreds of houses open throughout the city, and in each house you often get multiple designers and makers showing their work within that one house. So it's always a real sort of treat to walk around with your brochure and get to nose around people's houses. So that is part of it, let's face it.
Yeah, sounds like my cup of tea, actually.
I know, it's really good fun. So I open up a house just the downstairs, and because I'm so nature inspired, my house is called the Nature House, and I invite other makers from all different types of disciplines, from, you know, pottery, jewelry, homeware, textiles, so all different types of things, and but they must be nature inspired in some form. And I really love it. It's a crazy busy month. I get to meet lots of people. My studio is open and I often do a bit of demonstration and show a bit of, you know, how I create my artwork as well. And yeah, it's fun and a bit of a crazy month, really. I'm always absolutely exhausted by the end of it.
I can imagine. How do the family feel about having the house thrown open?
My little boy absolutely loves it. He's turned 11 now, but obviously we've been doing it for 5 years, and he often goes, "When's the artists coming over?" he says, and he really enjoys it. My daughter's not so keen, but she's nearly 15 and a teenager, so she just hides her head. But yeah, it's good fun, and you literally open your doors and people walk around with the trail guide and they just come in and can buy things and look around and ask questions, and it's just it's a really nice kind of atmosphere.
Is it a little bit like selling your house in that you have to keep very tidy for that for that period of time?
Honestly, it's like before we kind of do it and all the artists come in and set up, first looks like we've moved out, because I have to literally move everything from the downstairs upstairs, like all our own personal belongings. And then they all come in and set up and I'm hanging all my artwork, and it feels like I'm living in a gallery for a month. So it looks lovely once it's all set up. But the problem with that is that I keep seeing all this gorgeous work in my house, and my husband's like, "We are not buying everything." So, but it is, you do have to keep a very tidy house and make sure nothing gets broken as well.
I could imagine, And you were mentioning that you have a studio. Is that outside?
It is. So about 3 years ago, we had a studio put at the bottom of the garden. And so it's my own personal space to, do all my own artwork now. And at the time, it took me ages to commit to it because, you know, these things aren't cheap. And I was really worried. And like all of us, you know, when it's not for the whole family, you think, "Oh, why am I doing this?" So, but we I've done it, and honestly, I haven't looked back. It was just the best thing I've ever done for my art practice, to be able to have that space and being able to walk away from it as well and just shut the door and just, you know, being able to go in the house, and that degree of separation sometimes is really nice. And my process with the paint and printing and all that can be a bit messy as well. It's really nice that it isn't in the house as well. Absolutely love it.
So were you having to sort of move everybody out previously when you were painting? Is that something you had to do in the kitchen and move them all out, or?
Yeah, so when I first started doing it, like 10 years ago, we were in our old house and I was literally doing it on the kitchen table. And when we moved here about 8 years ago, there was a tiny little box room, which we sort of said that could be my little art room, but it was tiny. So me trying to do anything large scale, and that I quite enjoy working reasonably large, I found it really tricky. And as the business was growing, I just felt like I needed more space. And we ummed and ahed for such a long time about building the studio, because Brighton gardens are not big. So we were like, "Oh, are we going to lose too much of the garden?" And anyway, we decided to go for it, and it's just been the best decision. And I wish I'd done it ages ago. But yes, it's our third year of having it now, and it's just really wonderful.
And do you find yourself sort of, are you really strict with yourself about hours that you go out there and those are work? Do you put those to one side, or when the inspiration takes you?
I'm pretty dedicated to it. So when the kids are at school, that's my time to kind of work on things. And as they're getting older now, like just recently, I've sort of stopped picking up my little boy from school. So it's just given me that little more wriggle room to kind of work on it. What I try and do is make sure in the holidays that I make time for the kids. August, I really love to have a complete break from it. I find having moments of rest from it really beneficial. So that's when I'll be out walking more, seeing more. So I'm not doing anything. I'm actually just having those moments of wanting to get inspired again.
Yeah.
And I think trying to sort of step off that treadmill of constant creating can be really good for you. So you're looking forward to coming back to it. So I have what I call my intense moments, which I would call is my intense times leading up to the open house and other exhibitions that I'm applying for. And then it leads me into the summer where I can sort of breathe and go out and get inspired again. And then it will lead me into that busy time from September to like November. So, I would say it goes in waves, but my general day to day, I try and do it in school hours a bit. So,
Just looking at your website and the way that your work is beautifully photographed and displayed, that's something that I assume that you're doing yourself. Would that be correct?
Yeah.
So that's a whole other job after you finished the job of actually creating the piece, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, when you sort of run your own sort of artistic business, there's so much other stuff you have to do.
Like, certainly is.
it's not just the creating involved. And I think, you know, because I had my design background, you know, I'm really confident with Photoshop and being able to tidy up my photographs and present them really nicely, as nicely as I can anyway. It's just a case of I take all my own photographs, but you know, you take a photograph and it's not quite straight, or you know, there's this going on, or so you end up having to just tidy it up. And I think because of that kind of design background, I can do it fairly easily, to be fair. There is a lot involved in sign of photographing it, then getting it framed, and then putting it on the website and marketing and all those other things you have to do.
I think that's something that many people don't realize unless they've run a creative business, that you have your sort of what I'm going to call your day job, in that, you know, you're producing what they can see if they go to your website. But on top of that, there's all of the marketing, there's the accountancy, which has to be done, doesn't it? There's just so many different, you have to have so many different hats for all these different tasks. And it can be really, I think sometimes it can be quite overwhelming, actually.
Yeah, and I'm dyslexic, so some of the written aspect of it I do find really overwhelming. And I've started working with someone who will just help me a little bit on that side of it, because I was finding I was getting so overwhelmed by, you know, just doing my weekly newsletter, for example. So, yeah, I'm starting to get a bit of help on that side, which is being a lifesaver. Again, it's just like, why haven't I done this before? You know, it's still me, but it's just someone else polishing it in a way that makes me feel more confident putting it out there. Because, you know, a lot of creatives are, you know, we're good at one aspect. It doesn't mean we're good at everything. But when you run your own business, you've kind of got to be, haven't you?
You really have, yes. You certainly have. I mean, I agree with you. We have somebody that does our marketing. And it's great, it is. But obviously, you've still got to be the one that's actually coming up with, because they can only do what you tell them, can't they? They can only sort of highlight what you tell them.
Yeah, it's got to be your voice and your what you want them to say. But that's not the bit that makes me feel anxious. It's the sort of getting it down onto paper. You know, and often when I was writing something and I'd read it back and I'd be like, it's not hitting what it's like. I knew in my head what I wanted it to do, and I wasn't being able to do it, if you know what I mean. I think I have a clear vision. It's sometimes translating that clear vision can be challenging.
I'm incredibly impressed that you produce a newsletter every week, because it's a lot, isn't it? It's quite you need to find quite a lot to put into a newsletter.
I think what I try and do with my newsletter is to, especially at this time, it's like I'm not there to sell them anything, and it shouldn't always be about the sort of selling, but I'm taking them on the journey of how this new collection is going. And so they kind of understand my thought process of why I'm creating. And sometimes it doesn't go to plan. And all those sort of bumps in the road they're just as important to say, because I think sometimes when you're learning if you're learning to do art or textile art, it can feel like everybody else around you is getting it right and you're not. And we all have our moments where we want to tear it up and throw it across the room.
Oh, yes.
And, you know, we all have those things. So, you know, for me, it's just a bit of a sort of reflective kind of, you know, this week's gone great, or this week hasn't gone so great. But, you know, it's sort of the creative journey that we choose to be on. And, you know, everybody goes through those moments. And I think that's all I'm trying to communicate with my art newsletters, is that it's a bit of a journey.
It is indeed. I think sometimes, again, you know, and I know that you teach, so you'll, I'm sure, have the same experience. Students start and they expect that it is all going to go smoothly. They don't think they have to experiment or try things out themselves, you know, that they're just going to, that they're born knowing somehow. And you're really not, are you?
You're not. And I think there is this perfectionist gene that's been put in all of us. And someone once said to me about, and they turned the koi, so I can't claim to this one, but they called it the creative wound. And I think it can stem back from school a little bit, where maybe someone's been told that something wasn't great, or they can't draw, or you know, this idea that it's always got to be perfect and you've got to create this perfect artwork. And actually, if you unravel all of that, and even if you don't finish things, but you've learnt from it, there's the key bit, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what I always say to my students. I don't care if you finish it or not. It's wonderful if you do. But what I want from you is to be able to say at the end of it, I love this bit, I hated that bit, and I want to pursue that bit. And that is enough, you know, for you to then take the next step in your creative journey of what, because it's all about discovering who you are as a creative person. If you want to be an artist, you know, or not, or you're doing it for pure pleasure, there's still there's a real satisfaction in really discovering what you enjoy as a creative person and developing new techniques. And it doesn't have to be perfect every time at all.
No, I think it is very hard sometimes for students to accept that. I mean, would you have any advice for students that do have problems with the process of creating their own designs? Because they can sometimes find it very tense, very anxiety-inducing. It shouldn't be that way, but sometimes that is the way they feel, I think. And I wonder if you have any advice for them that will take some of that pressure off or lead them off in a more productive direction.
Yeah, I mean, like we've talked about, I think creative play is really important. But if they find it physically hard to get started, I would advise, well, this is what I do anyway, which really helps me. And this is what I say to my students. I don't just have one artwork when I start. So I tend to have a few that I'm working on at the same time. And what that does for me is stops one being particularly precious.
Yes.
So I will work on different ones, and then I might what I call have my winners and losers out of that pile of work. But even the ones that I'm not happy with, I don't throw them away. They might get cut up or collaged with, or I might use them to try out a new technique. And I think it's sort of letting go of things being perfect. And I know it's really difficult. But for me, if I'm working on multiple pieces, it stops the pressure of that one piece.
Yes.
Being like, it has to be perfect, because ultimately you're just working on that one bit. And I think if you're working on multiples at the same time, like if you hit a bit of a tricky moment in one, you can pick up something else and then wait for that one to, what I sort of calls me again, you know, it's telling me to do something. And it does alleviates that pressure, I think, if you go, right, I'm going to start 5 new pictures. And, you know, it works for me to do it that way personally.
I think that's great advice, because it does stop you obsessing over one, doesn't it?
Mm.
I've sometimes done something similar. You know, I will start a number and then I will think that moment there's something wrong with one that I'm working on. I go off and look at something else. Then when I come back, I think, so what was the problem? I can't remember.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it also, I think it can really depend on your state of mind at that moment as well. Yeah. You know, and you could come back to it in a week's time, like you said, and you've got a completely different frame of mind and you're feeling very differently about the world. And you could then approach your artwork totally differently. And I think if you're having a bit of a moment with something, it could be because of a number of reasons, not even necessarily about the artwork. And it could might be the time to just sort of go, I need to go for a walk, I just need to walk away from this, I need, you know, whatever it is to calm, it makes you feel calmer again and walk away from it. But yeah, I do find working on multiple pieces really helpful for me.
I think that's great advice. So Ellie, what's next for you? I mean, are there other things that you have underway, new book or anything like that?
No, but I am trying to push my practice a little bit more forward. So recently, I got accepted to be a member of the Society of Designer Craftsmen, and I was thrilled to be accepted. And I went to the Collect exhibition at the weekend, and I met some of the people that run the membership. And I think it's this opportunity for me to really push my practice forward as well. So it's something that I'm really contemplating. I've got some new ideas, and Yes, I just, you know, so I'm putting my work forward for a few exhibitions. So we'll see if I get accepted for those. But I always keep my website updated so, people can see what exhibitions I'll be involved in going forward.
And you do workshops as well, don't you?
If people
are local.
Yes. Where people can come and explore textile mixed media techniques, and they will create a series of like little mini artworks. And we'll be exploring things like fabric painting, using fabric spray paints, using molding paste, expand it, hand stitching, all different kinds of things. But it'll be a real mixed media fun week to just explore. And every morning I'll be showing new techniques, and they can then add and create new little mini artworks as the week goes by. And so yes, those are the kind of things that I do.
Yeah, got a lot of, I think as well, I mean, the idea of just having a week where you're able to completely concentrate on doing, well, such creative work. I think it's many people's idea of heaven, isn't it?
Well, I hope so. And I kind of don't want to make it too rigid either. So I think if you're doing a whole week with somebody, I wanted it to feel quite playful. So that's why I thought the little mini artworks could be really helpful. Going back to like what we spoke about earlier, you know, if it was just one big artwork and you didn't love it, that would be not a happy experience. So I think actually producing lots of mini artworks and then being able to select the ones that you really love, and then we could mount them and make them a real collection of like little mini abstracts. I think it's a more relaxed way of approaching it, really getting to know some new techniques without it feeling too literal.
Yes.
I just wanted that to be a really playful week, getting to know actually some of my favourite materials that I love to use. So, hopefully that would be really good fun.
Yeah, sounds fantastic. I think sometimes as well, and I know we've talked about, the inspiration for design, but I think equally important within that whole mix is actually having some of the knowledge of the techniques that you can carry forward, that you have in your arsenal, so to speak, that you can use, and how you can use them and where you can use them.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, it is a week of technique and just playing with them and seeing what comes up, and not trying to do, if I did one big artwork with them and they were trying, I just felt like this would be a lot more approachable. And again, because you can work on multiple pieces, nothing's going to feel too precious either. I thought that was a really good way of approaching it, especially over a week. I mean, when I do my weekend or day workshops, essentially you can only work on one piece. And I think this is the advantage of doing that sort of summer school, is that we just got a lot more room to play.
Yeah, sounds fantastic. Well, Ellie, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been an absolute pleasure chatting to you about your work and your practice. I've really enjoyed it, and I'm sure that the listeners will as well.
Oh, thank you for having me.